is 11 a.m. We're recording.
Okay, this is the April 2nd, 2026 special security meeting. It is 11 o'clock, and those present are Brandon Areno, John Merchant, myself, Linda Butler, Amelia Wilder, and Diane Fleet. And we have an audience member.
Woo!
Okay, no comments from the public? Any comments from the public? No? Okay. First discussion item is Brandon's security report for this past month.
All right. Security Department continues to prioritize staffing stability, operational readiness, proactive community engagement. Key updates are as follows. All full-time security department positions are currently filled. Current staffing levels are 7 full-time.
Brandon, yes. Thank you.
7 full-time gate officers, 7 part-time gate officers, 4 full-time patrol officers, 17 employees in total, including 6 probationary. We had one part-time employee that had been hired and is currently in training. The department is currently updating emergency after-hours contact information for businesses within the district to improve response efficiency. The practice of publishing schedules one month in advance has been implemented. Schedules are now distributed every third Friday of the month to improve staffing consistency and assignment coverage. Vehicle Unit 53 has been repaired and returned to service following repairs completed by Caliber Collision. Vehicle decals and logos are planned to be reinstalled. And Security Supervisor Areno will be attending ISC West from March 24th to 27th, which I have now returned. And the RMA Association coordination, we're still doing what we do for RMA. Weekly speed enforcement and enforcing non-architectural rules and continuing to participate in the compliance committee meetings. And then moving on to the incidents and notes. Between February and March, it was quite a month. At the end of February, on February 27th at approximately 7:14 p.m., CSD patrol notified dispatch of a vehicle collision at the intersection of Marietta Drive and Jackson Highway. The incident involved a resident operating a golf cart traveling southbound across Highway 16 toward nearby businesses who entered the intersection and was struck by a van traveling westbound Highway 16. The resident sustained a head injury with visible bleeding as a result of the collision. Southgate personnel immediately contacted 911 and EMS responded to the scene and transported the injured resident for further medical evaluation and treatment. CSD patrol remained on the scene to assist with the traffic hazard. Then on March 20th, at approximately 12:03 a.m., dispatch received a report from a resident of a possible traffic collision near the county bridge on Highway 16. CSD patrol was dispatched and located a vehicle on the golf course near hole 18 on the south side of the community beyond a damaged fence line. Upon arrival, CSD patrol located a silver 2013 Honda Accord with significant damage. The driver, identified as a 16-year-old resident, was standing outside the vehicle and reported no injuries. The driver stated he lost control of the vehicle, overcorrected, and drove through the fence line entering the golf course. CHP responded, and CSD and association was notified about the damaged fence property, and they remained on scene to assist with the traffic. And on March 22nd, 2026, at approximately 5 a.m., CSD patrol observed a U-Haul parked in front of Marietta Nail Lounge located within the Marietta Plaza. Upon inspection, patrol discovered that the front glass door of the business had been shattered. Further assessment revealed signs of forced entry and burglary, including damage to an ATM machine near the entrance and tampering with the business's cash register. Patrol immediately notified dispatch of a possible active burglary and remained on scene to monitor the vehicle and area in the event the suspects return. The business owner arrived on scene approximately 5:15 a.m. and advised that his alarm system activated at approximately 4:48 a.m., which actually ended up being his Ring doorbell camera that they have at the business. The business owner reported observing two suspects on his Ring camera described as African-American males wearing black hooded sweatshirts and mask, using a crowbar to force entry into the business. Video footage was not retrievable due to the system not having an active subscription. Patrol further observed that the driver's side door of the U-Haul truck had been tampered with, indicating the vehicle was likely stolen and used in the commission of the crime. The incident was documented and appropriate notifications were made. Sheriffs later responded after 8 a.m. So, yeah, that Marietta, I think what ended up happening with that, just kind of knowing a little bit, was one of my guys was patrolling that area.
Uh-huh.
And I think he might have actually scared those people away because they weren't in the business when he showed up.
Mm-hmm.
They left that U-Haul truck there that they had stolen, backed into the thing. They didn't take the ATM and they didn't take the cash register and weren't able to get any of the cash out. So I kind of think what he...
They got interrupted.
Yeah, just by him driving spooked them and whatever happened.
Once again, you know, it's... it's, you know, it's never good that... people want to do this, you know, but the fact that we had a patrol officer probably saved a lot more damage from happening and possibly even from loss of, you know, of money, etc. So yay, good job.
I'm just I'm thankful that he didn't get hurt in the process, because if they were still there, I mean, you know,
but well, if they were still there, unfortunately, he could have. All he had, all he needed to do or could do, would be to drive by and say, "Guess what? Something's happening."
He did everything he was supposed to do, and it's just, it's a shame that, you know, when you call somebody that they're not coming until after eight, you know, 8 a.m. when this thing happened at 5. I mean,
right.
And I think it's probably because it was a cold crime, so that's probably why they didn't come out any kind of sooner.
Because of what crime?
Being a cold crime, like there's nobody there.
Right.
So it's just something that they would have CSI come out and take pictures of and call it a day. The other thing I wanted to hit on is a email that we had received. I actually got this from the River Valley Times. She's seen it online. One of the residents had, over the spring break, he usually has his car parked in the garage, and he ended up having it parked outside of his house for spring break, and some unknown people placed firecrackers in his wheels, and I guess he was driving and they blew up. So these harmless pranks that may seem like fun, I mean, I understand, you know, everybody was a kid once. I was a kid. I've done, you know, some dumb things, but... you know, we got to kind of, I just want to, you know, let the parents of, you know, children know, you got to know what your kid's doing at all times sometimes.
Right.
You got to keep an eye on them. Be nosy every once in a while. Check their phones. You know, look around in the room. Make sure that they don't have nothing. I mean.
Are they home when they're supposed to be?
Yeah. You know, just like little simple stuff that would prevent like this, stuff like this from happening. Because, I mean, it's very possible that when this guy was driving down Dillard Road, he could have lost control and lost his life or somebody else. So I just wanted to put that out there that, you know, that I've reviewed this and we looked at it. And, you know, just make people aware.
Can I ask you, what kind of device, you said a firecracker, how does that...
I was trying to think the same thing. I'm guessing.
How does that go off?
I'm guessing the heat maybe sparked the igniter on a firecracker put in there. That was because it was on the brake system, from what it says.
All right.
Email.
Yeah, okay.
That's the only thing I could think of.
Clever, aren't they?
Yeah. I never thought about that when I was young.
No.
I mean, that involves science. And I don't know much about science.
Yeah. Walter White's out there somewhere.
I'm wondering, the incidents of note... are only seen at the board meeting and in your report, basically, right?
Mm-hmm. These are also available in our security logs that we publish on our website.
Okay, so that's right. It ends up in the River Valley Times.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of some way that we could use, for instance, that example and do exactly what you said, which is, you know, advice. Our resident parents that, you know, blah, 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 blah. Is there a
way to do that, John?
Well, there's a conversation in there that stems from the fact that over time we've had a full built out of a commercial area that's outside the gates.
Mm-hmm.
And we get consistent reports of the burglary is standalone in some respects, but all of the stuff that goes on, for example, in the Murrieta Gardens, where you see the porch pirating and the slow moving traffic at 5 o'clock in the morning creeping through the neighborhood. And then when you look, for example, at over time, the way we've based the allocation of our security fees, they're still paying
$8
a month in the village.
Yeah.
And the same amount of money, I'm assuming, in Murrieta Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what that means. I don't know what the conversation
commercial properties
is.
Pay.
The commercial properties pay security tax.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
And I would think it would be a fair question to ask them if you compared the rate of the tax for the shopping center, for example, to the coverage that they receive for that. Does it make more sense for that to be a contracted...
by them?
Yeah, I own six, at one point, six retail locations. And in every one of them, part of my common area maintenance was security.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the first one I've ever seen where it's not involved. I'm sure there are others, but...
Right.
You know, in light of what they pay,
mm-hmm.
As a trade-off to that amount,
mm-hmm.
does it make more sense for them to physically contract it
with a private company?
And with a private company and to get it when they need it. And so that's a conversation you might want to have.
I'm
not interested. To figure out how much they're paying individually and collectively to see if they can get together and,
And
right?
The other part of that, the other
data.
Part of that, you know, and I think there might be some philosophical or financial difference in the gardens versus the village, but I would be asking them
the same
question, and is there a way that you could combine that service that incorporated both, for example, Murrieta Gardens and
the village
and the shopping center together
everything.
Because it seems to me that the maximized coverage over there is not a daytime episode. It's more of an
it's been
dusk to dawn episode.
It's been a spring of different things, like the at El Gallo, the break-ins that they had in the vehicles over there. That was in broad daylight.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I feel like there's people that come through here that may know somebody here or may not even know somebody, and they just randomly came out here, seeing that's in the middle of nowhere, and now they're looking at our retail places and mm-hmm. everything else that's mm-hmm. involved over there.
Absolutely.
As a crime of opportunity.
Yeah.
And it's definitely increased since the commercial center got built. There's no question about that. I mean,
when I started here before the Bel Air was in, the biggest thing we talked about was the beavers chewing through the... Were you on the committee then? The beavers... chewed through in the lake,
mm-hmm.
one of the
reservoir,
in the reservoir, they chewed through the nets.
Yeah,
keep them. They keep fishermen's hooks from getting into the
right. I was here because our aerators are
right.
When they went down to figure out why we weren't getting the pressure, Paul was
mm-hmm.
here at the time. I mean, they took countless fishing hooks and lures
out of it. And then they put a net around it, and the beavers kept chewing through the net, and they thought we had vandalism, but it was beavers. Otters. Maybe it was
otters. Yeah.
The cute ones, the otters.
At any rate, the balance of that, you know, personally, I'm not interested in security as an enterprise, okay? I don't, it's not a business we're in to make money. So if there is an equitable...
It's a business to make, to survive.
if it is an equitable...
And provide a service.
If it is an equitable comparison to maximize security outside the gate by using a private service, would somebody be interested in doing that? I'm not trying to force it down anybody's throat.
But it might be more bang for their buck.
And I mean, I know the Bel Air has been plagued with people that walk in and all of a sudden just decide they're going to walk out the door with merchandise. So
Yeah, would sure.
Would that mean that they would no longer be charged for security
have,
tax?
I have from, I don't know, a couple of years ago, an analysis that Patrick did on suspending or removing the tax.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were to say, okay, we'll use our tax money and apply it to a private service that gives us better coverage, we could probably figure out a way to do that. And that would free up, you know...
time and energy.
I mean, the more you know, we're undoubtedly, even with response time, we're spending more and more time over there. That the more time we spend over there is the less time we spend inside the gates.
Right.
So, for what it's worth, I have that conversation.
I think we need
I'll get the analysis of how much they're spending, and then we'll move forward.
The other thing, if you could give me... you know, based on the 2% increase, the total tax that residential bills generate inside the gates,
mm-hmm.
north and south.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
That I have. Cecilia's already working on that for another project.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
The barcode project. Okay.
That pretty much concludes my report. If there's any questions about what the numbers with the gate entries or any other thing, just feel free to ask. But we still continue to let in about 10,000 people or more a month. So
yeah,
those numbers aren't changing. And I'd just like to say that's
you mean through the visitor gate, not or
yeah,
just
through the visitor lanes.
Through the visit, wow.
So that's 10,000 wow. times a
between
month.
The two. Yeah.
that arm's going.
I
up
know,
and down.
I know. We're going to address some of that.
But that's the human contact number.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. And Brandon, you want to talk to us about the?
I wonder how many the Pentagon has.
I don't know. right. I think maybe 9 different sides. Or
we're not putting the mirror underneath the car, are we?
No.
Just
checking. Not yet.
Do we want to move on to your trade show report?
Sure.
Okay.
All right. So from the 24th to the 27th, myself and Chris over here attended the ISC West 2026. And this is the report that I compiled from it. Attendance at the ISC West 2026 provided a comprehensive opportunity to evaluate current and emerging security technologies, engage directly with vendors, and assess solutions applicable to Rancho Mirada Community Service District operations. The ability to review multiple systems side by side allowed for a more efficient and informed understanding of available technology, industry trends, and practical applications for the district. A key highlight of the conference was engagement with Robotic Assistance Devices, RAD, which presented autonomous security units designed to supplement traditional patrol operations. These units are capable of conducting continuous patrols, monitoring designated areas, and providing real-time alerts through integrated cameras, sensors, and audio capabilities. The systems include features such as license plate recognition, motion detection, two-way communication, and automated incident notifications. RAD devices are designed to act as a visible deterrent while supporting an observe and report operation model, making them a potential tool for enhancing coverage in high traffic and or vulnerable areas without increasing staffing levels. The technology has demonstrated as reliable, highly configurable, and increasingly being adopted in both private and municipal environments. That was my favorite robot. That's why it started first.
Uh-huh.
That one was my favorite. If you look at the pictures, it's actually that little car-looking sure. thing that says Romeo across it. And
That's what the robot is?
Yeah, that guy right there.
Uh-huh.
And he's about as big as a golf cart?
A little Honda Civic hatchback.
Oh, so he's bigger than a golf cart.
A Geo Metro. Maybe a golf cart size a little bit.
Okay.
But that was one of the ones that I spent probably like 30 to 45 minutes, it felt like, talking to the guy just because I was so interested in it. The front of it has this little LED like light bar that has a little smiley face. But other than that, from what he explained to me, that that thing does, they use it a lot in like
garages and gated facilities and stuff like that. It works 18 hours a day before it actually has to be recharged. And what it does is it's generated with artificial intelligence. It's equipped with that. So what it will do when it's driving around, if it sees like a car or something that was broken in a building, it'll alert who it needs to alert to get help over there, to when a human needs to come and either intervene or call the proper authorities. Mm-hmm. So it automatically does that. And it also gives voice commands. You could equip it to do voice commands. And it's fitted with all these different cameras on it. Mm-hmm. You know, LiDAR, all that stuff could go on to it. So it was actually pretty cool, and I kind of joked about it, like having one of these in the community. Mm-hmm. You know, how quick it would get turned into spray painted by one of the kids.
Right, that's what I just thought was...
Then pushing into like Lake Clementia or something.
Yeah, right.
Right.
You know, but the
Jumping on top of it, riding it, yeah. Hooking a rope onto the back of it, having pull up both skateboards.
I was hoping we'd be able to equip it with those little robot guys, and they'll jump out and just.
Oh yeah! There you go.
Stop doing that.
Can you? Do you remember how much one of those little puppies cost?
He said $8,000 a month.
Oh, $8,000 a month. Yes. So they provide the robots.
Yeah. They'll provide one of those for about $8,000 a month, and it's a lease. He doesn't recommend it because I told him, I was like, you know, we really don't lease anything. We buy everything. Mm-hmm. And he said he wouldn't recommend it because there's always going to be updates and stuff.
Right.
No, I would. Financially, that's a Cecilia question, but you know, you just don't write leases off.
Yeah.
Especially in technology, mm-hmm. like that. You don't. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if someone was discourteous to it, what could it be programmed to do?
Well, it can't get violent yet. It's not the Terminator yet.
I mean, could it just?
It's not a law enforcement officer. Yeah.
It could just turn itself off.
Yeah, I didn't get that much into it. I'm guessing it would probably maybe hopefully try to run away or just stay there and take whatever punishment it's getting.
Okay.
But that thing, it was really cool, and I just thought, you know, it was like, if that thing works 18 hours a day, you don't have to pay it, you know, benefits.
It probably is eligible for PERS. So.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
And then it can talk to somebody, and you can... So is it pre-programmed on where it goes?
Yeah, basically they
it's got
send
a siren. I mean, let's hear about
that. Yeah, it'll they bring somebody out here and they train whoever's in your IT department. And he said that it really has like some great reviews on, you know, the training, because it gets the IT people to
excited
and makes them feel like, you know, a kid again, because it's like a new toy. And
Andy would play with that.
So yeah. give me when you were talking to him, give me an example of the kind of application that they're when you say they're using it like in a garage.
So the videos that I seen that where those things are, it looked like it was probably like in an industrial type area. Mm-hmm. And it just does circles. It just drives around, and all the cameras that it's equipped with, it's making sure that there's no that there's no problems going on, like there's nothing that was broken, there's no issues that are happening. Like, mm-hmm. you could train it to pretty much respond, or whatever it sees, it's going to report.
So if you, when in your travels through this thing, it looks like it must have been a lot of fun, because there's a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah.
If you're looking at automation and AI particularly, and you're looking at what we deal with, which is 250,000 mm-hmm. physical contacts a year. Mm-hmm. One-on-one,
mm-hmm. yeah.
that are independent of the barcoded lift.
Gate. Mm-hmm.
What's out there particularly that sticks in your mind that would be an appropriate application for? I mean, that has to be, in the grand scheme of things, you know, I make these jokes all the time about mm-hmm. the Pentagon. 250,000 lifts is... interactions is a lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, that's 5 full houses at Oracle Park.
Right.
So what stood out in your mind? Anything that...
Artificial intelligence. Because that's honestly, it felt like that trade show was based around
artificial intelligence.
Well, so is everything else.
Well, yeah. But all of a sudden. It kind of threw me down like a rabbit hole after, like, you know, reflecting on the trade show and seeing these robots, seeing the cameras, because there was at one point we walked through, like, the Motorola station, and they're equipping all their cameras with artificial intelligence, facial recognition, and stuff like that. So me walking through these cameras, if they were to program saying that, hey, that's his face, you know, because it's already facial recognized me, that's Brandon's face, type my name into the search engine, now it'll show me all these cameras of theirs that they have that I walked through, and it'll point me out in all those different cameras mm-hmm. in a crowded area, no matter what. So to me, that's kind of like what really stuck out was the how high-tech technology's really gotten with camera systems, this artificial intelligence. It seems like if you put it into anything that you have, it could either make your life simpler or be a little bit more invasive. Like,
yeah, know. No, but my I'm interested in, like, from a standpoint of gate operations, you know, how much AI and automation could enhance and expedite that process. You're getting to, for example, here's when Kyle is finished developing, there's mm-hmm. 197 houses up there. If you use
2.5 people,
if you use 2.4 census eight, numbers, mm-hmm. and you use on an average, and I don't even know what our average is, but it's got to be 2.5 cars because mm-hmm. there's people in my neighborhood with five. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And if you include carts,
we're two people and we have two. Okay.
Right.
Just by the fact of where we live and what we do. So if you look at that's magnified, you're arbitrarily, we know this is real development because they're building them.
Yeah.
Okay. There's 500 cars that are when the way that the development is designed, they're all going down Para Drive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so, you know, and they're going to generate 2.5 plus whatever the standard is for all of the Amazon deliveries and plumbers and electricians and everybody else that's going to become part of the process. So,
pest control.
So right. When, at what point, without assistance, particularly the North Gate, does mm-hmm. that become unmanageable? I know what it's like at 7:15 in the morning because yeah. I try to go to the dentist.
I could honestly say it's like that all day. My guy, like, I'll talk to Rick every now and then, and like I said, I go and give them breaks a lot. When I go over there, it's just like you might as well just move the guard shack to the Jackson Highway. That's how much traffic that's coming through there, coming through the visitor lane, coming through the resident lane. And in my opinion, if we don't upgrade our gate entry system, and I've already looked into those gate entry systems. I've talked to ABDI about putting in their LPR system. I've talked to GoAxis, which is right now it seems like it's going to be the far more superior. And if we put that in, it opens up the availability with our LPR cameras that a guest could go through the resident lanes just by their license plate popping up and being attached to one of the houses already. And that's going to speed things up tremendously. You're not going to have these long lines. Now they could go down Para. Now they could go down the parkway and any one of those other gates besides that visitor lane. The only people truly going through those visitor lanes would be ones that aren't registered to enter the community at all. So if you've already been on somebody's permanent list and you've been there before and you're okay to go through, there you go.
Yeah.
And that's gonna speed up so much.
In communications, we were talking about what were we talking about? I'm sorry, I lost it.
We were talking about RMA and their gate rules.
Oh, right. We were talking about gate access rules and how getting people to just call in their guests, you know, so that they can go through.
So that they're ready.
So doing reminders and all that stuff. But what I've always heard from you is that there is technology out there that can make this whole lot easier. And that's what I was hoping you would see at the trade show, cameras and gate technology, et cetera.
Yeah.
Then we've talked about gate technology ABDI is what we have now, and then about Go Access and replacing ABDI with Go Access, et cetera. I think that one of the things that I've been struggling with is where can we get money for what?
Yeah.
And there is, in theory, money in security impact fees. The big issue continues to be we don't know how much, and we don't know how much we've paid out. There are, and Cecilia has helped me understand all of this, but there are line items in our audits and in our budgets for under security purchases and or payments, and it says $120,000 from Rainin and Bartus. But what was it for? Mm-hmm. And then you have to try to go and find invoices that are attached to that or some kind of explanation for what that $120,000 was for. Can we count that or part of that toward the security impact? Was part of that payment for security impact fees? We don't know that. And so when it comes to either maintenance or replacement, you know, such as replacement technology or replacement gate arms, the big, you know, the whole mechanism, if we can identify money availability through security impact fees, we can use security impact money to do those things. I thought I brought it with me, but we have a, I want to say a policy agreement regarding the security impact fees that identifies what we can use it for.
Yes.
And it's not
2016-02.
Yeah, right. And that's, is that a policy?
09, it's policy.
Yeah, okay. And so really we are, we may have resources that we don't know about or money that we can access. And bottom line is she has to get through this audit and this budget thing, and then I want that, frankly, that and barcodes to be two of the first priorities that we identify and do something about.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like we're close to being able to get, I mean, we've got the information. You've brought us the information over and over again. And
right.
Being able to implement the things that we need to implement is really the survival of security is going to be dependent on that stuff.
Right.
So I guess I would like to make a comment or a statement in the for the record that we really need to finish the audits, et cetera. But in the process, we need to figure out barcodes and we need to figure out security impact fees.
Here's where that goes. For example, with impact fees, take the last remaining development we have is for 561 houses. That's probably 12 or 13 or 1400 cars, whatever that number really turns out to be. There is an impact fee in that last piece of development that is not tailored to putting cameras up around the community. Mm-hmm. That last 561 houses breaks our gate.
Mm-hmm.
It renders our gate inoperable.
Yep.
Okay.
It's so, just too darn many people to get through that gate.
Right. Argument number one is, well, we paid $1.4 million in the MBA and we built a north gate. So what? You built it to make the place look pretty. Okay? You didn't and to some degree modify the community, but the $1.4 million that they paid for the gate not only impacts the 561, it impacts all the rest of it, another couple of hundred units that are not currently on the existing application. So at what point do we say that, well, yeah, they're all going to pay tax? Well, we know that the tax barely...
It's a one-time thing.
Yeah, the tax barely covers the operating... operating costs, doesn't cover any overhead, doesn't cover anything else. It's just covers right. the operating expense that Brenda's people have to run the place.
Right.
So there's an impact fee. There's a big impact fee on unless we modernize, unless we get the technology necessary to move that many more people through here. This the population goes to like 8,700 people from 6,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So unless you accommodate that with an upfront impact fee, you know, an assessment yeah. on security, or unless you build a new impact fee that accommodates that problem, then you're never going to get out of this.
No.
Yep.
And that's
so.
That is.
I mean, you know, and it's interesting taking into account that all of that contribution from the MBA, the double dues that all of these people pay.
Right.
Not a nickel right. of that goes to security. I mean, well, $300 a month, whatever it is that we get paid for writing parking tickets.
Oh.
Or whatever. But so somewhere in that conversation, you need to fix this problem because these people are rushing around here. That thing becomes real the minute they find or they don't find water.
Understood.
Mm-hmm. If they find water, it's real, and it's real now, and it's going to happen now. If they don't find water, well, we don't have to worry about it.
We don't have to worry about it.
The 561 units are currently zoned agricultural, and this whole process about finding water and ultimately ends up with if that development can go forward or not, and the county ultimately makes the final decision, but that's why we are so, along with state law SB 552, et cetera.
Yeah.
That's why it is so imperative that you know we address these situations now, and we are. But even if we don't talk about that particular situation, 198. Units are Bob Kyle's.
Yes, ma'am.
And a few of them have, I think, already gotten meters. But 198, and it's 2.48, but I just used 2.5. So that's, what, another 450 people?
Yeah.
Right? So, and that's happening now.
Okay.
And that's not years away or,
well,
you know.
68 is happening now.
What's that?
68 are happening now.
But, yeah, but
the, No, I meant.
That development is
it's
approved. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's 450 more people, maybe even closer to 500, but 450. Retreats is finished. 62 units. Well, Retreats was two parts. Phase one was the 22 houses that are on the parkway as you come in. And then the other 62 were, you can see them, you know, they're on Marietta Drive. So that's finished. So that has 62 times. 2.5, whatever that is, another 300, 250 people. And they all have cars, at least one car, maybe two, in those lots. So we're talking about almost another 1,000 people right now. That's going to be happening right now in the next couple of years. And we already know the problems we have at this at this gate situation, lines, et cetera. And that doesn't even, talking about that is one thing, we're not even talking about making the community safe. And that's a huge part of what security is supposed to be all about. And we are woefully and sadly just not addressing that. It's one thing for the resident to complain about not being able to get a patrol person, but it's another whole thing when you start talking about the effects on people ingress and egress and fire and flood. And, you know, it's a whole huge topic that needs to be addressed, and it just doesn't get the understanding. Mm-hmm. The whole picture is what I feel is not happening for us.
Yep. it up.
So can I ask a question, please? Mm-hmm. Brandon, it's back to what you said about the license plate reader. Mm-hmm. So my guest is still going to come through the guest lane, and before the gate officer can say, hi, the gate's already opened and they're through. Is that the big picture there?
Yeah, or they could go through the resident lane.
Or they can go through the resident lane.
Yeah. What it's going to take, all it's going to take is, it'll probably take
but
maybe...
But then they'd have to, oh, no, but then they don't need a barcode.
No, we won't even have to pay for barcodes anymore if we use license plate readers like that.
No more barcodes.
And well, wait a minute.
No, but the other part of that, for example, with the permanent guest list, for yes. example, Erin, my daughter, was born and raised here.
Yep.
Doesn't live here. And we'll come up sometimes for a week. Okay, and so she stops and gets a pass. Of course, she's on the list, so she gets a pass. She gets a pass for 7 days or so. So, but she's still through the gate, hold the pass up, mm-hmm. through the gate, mm-hmm. hold the mm-hmm. pass up for that entire week. What this offers is she never gets a pass. Mm-hmm. She's already on the permanent guest list. Mm-hmm. It's my
she
responsibility if I right. want to take her off of that. For lack of cooperation or anything else,
then for being
that's my job. Okay, it's not his job to manage my personal guest. But once you're on there, you should be able. And that's who's on it. It's grandchildren.
Sure.
I mean, you know,
it's the landscaper, it's yeah. the caregiver, it's the
right.
grandchildren.
So those people.
But now that the problem with that, if I may, is that the landscaper's on the permanent guest list. He drives through. It's 3:30 in the afternoon. He pops around to the reservoir, has himself some lunch, maybe a couple beers, and
well,
that's going to tick
you know,
off security.
Maybe you know that's a procedural problem because maybe it's physical guests and it's not landscapers, it's not electricians, it's not anybody. Yeah.
Those people,
Rod has a plan to control those people in a specific way with a deposit and all that other stuff, but. You know, somebody's grandchildren
should be able to just pop through.
Should be able to come and go.
Yeah.
Agreed. Oh, I agree.
And you could set it to where, like, vendors, you know, we have our work hours. You could set there to where the gate will open for them at 7 a.m.
Yes.
So.
Right.
And, like, the technology, like I'm saying, like, especially going through with Go Access, it's all there. It's all there to where you could automate a gate at night if you wanted to and just have one guy working the south gate and from the south gate, he could automate that north gate. So if we had somebody that's not on anybody's list and they're going through the north gate and they go up to that visitor lane and hitting button, it rings over there. He says, hey, who are you here to visit? Looks them up. Boom. There you go.
Right.
So that would essentially could eliminate the need for a gate officer in the north gate or the south gate. Yeah.
If we upgrade our technology, it's gonna in the long run, it's going to save us money.
Okay.
So
that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what I want to do after my little speech about getting security impact fees to, I want to make we'll get together and we'll work through this and we'll make a few plans and give the board and the community review of how these things can help us.
Right.
And yes, it's going to be. Beginning expenditure, but what did you tell me for Go Access?
Well, what do you need to know about it?
There's a upfront fee.
Yeah,
and that's
it's. I want to say it's in. I don't have it in front of me,
no,
so
that's
I want to
okay.
say it's about $30,000.
$30,000.
To get all their hardware and everything implemented
forever.
And yes, and when it once you get it all done, they actually will transfer all our information that's in ABDI over to their system, so we don't have to do all that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to use our manpower to do that at all. And the next best thing about them I like is that if there's ever a problem, they have people to answer the phones. You don't have to call the gate, and hopefully the guy that you're talking to, you know, hopefully he knows something about ABDI. If he doesn't, then, you know, then you're pretty much out of luck until the next shift comes on.
Right.
But they have, they have their own numbers that residents will be able to call and like, hey, I'm having an issue with my Access app, can you fix this? And then somebody else will do it, and you know it creates the headache of us not having to do it.
And the monthly
more.
Fee
The monthly fee is around the same price as what we spend now, which is $1,250. I want to say it goes up maybe $300, so we'll probably
$1,500.
Yeah, about so.
So honestly,
And they started doing with the
reports. Yeah, they started doing the patrol thing. Like, anything I've asked...
Oh, really?
Yeah,
they started... That was the one thing they didn't do.
Yeah, and they started doing that. I mean, it kind of shows faith that they want our business, because the only reason why that they started doing that and implemented that and started working with their engineers... was because we had mentioned something about that, and they probably thought it was a good idea, knowing that there's other HOAs just like us that, you know, need this type of function. So
I'm wondering how we can move this along, because I think that it's beyond a priority. It's absolutely the first thing that we should
do. If we could get it done before 4th of July, that would be amazing.
Wow.
Because that would give us the real...
4th of July.
Yeah, that would give us the real...
real test.
Yeah, the real test to see how quick everything would be.
Well, we need an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper that fully outlines what it costs to get in and what it costs...
And all the things that you just talked about, all the things they can do, how the system will work for us.
The point I want to make, too, right now, the technology currently that we have right now, you might as well give me a clipboard with everybody's name on it to see if they could come through the gate and I could just check them off. That's how bad our technology is right now.
Antiquated, you know? It is, yeah.
Yeah, so.
I mean, when you...
at the show,
oh,
you
no.
guys use it now.
It
was at ABI, and the guy laughed at it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it served a purpose 20 years ago.
Yeah,
or whatever.
It was faster than the binder that they had of everybody's. Yeah,
I mean, I went through the gate at Pebble Beach a couple of months ago, and not only did I get cleared to go through the gate, he took my money and my credit card and paid my $12, and I went through and I was gone in like 15 seconds. I don't know what he was using, but certainly it was not a clipboard.
So when we went to the trade show at the Venetian, we were in a rental car, and I was trying to figure out, I never put my license plate to tell it where, you know, where my parking ticket was or anything like that. And I had realized when I went through the security checkpoint and into the parking garage, you pull a ticket out, and I didn't realize that it takes a picture of your license plate and already puts it out on a ticket. So when I went to pay and I go out, the gate automatically opened for me because it read my license plate and it seen that I paid. And it took me a minute to figure that out.
Wow.
I was like, what? How? That's why is my license plate on? Oh.
I can, you know, for the years that I traveled all the time when I was working. And when I went to, there were, I don't know, over the years, probably 3 times where I did not remember to write my parking space location on my ticket.
Oh, God, yeah.
If you go to the gate, they will tell you where your car is.
Yeah.
They know where your car is.
Yeah. And that's exactly the type of technology we need to implement here. I mean, it may even get rid of the yellow passes that we hand out, and people may wonder, how are we going to know if there's visitors or if there's residents at the gates that are allowed to be there? Well, the minute we pull up and we run the license plate, we're going to know who they are either way, whether they have that yellow pass or not.
Right.
So.
Right.
Then again, 5 clipboards cost us about $20.
Well, I can get them to 10.
Yeah. And we can watch the switchboard light up 500 times a day from social media.
I mean, there's also, I mean, if you talk this through, for example, I don't know from a marketing standpoint, that maybe we charge, it's a very convenient thing, maybe we charge $10 for 12 months of unlimited access for your grandchildren.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Or still charge people $10 fee for putting their license plate into the system for them to go through the gate.
Yeah.
Essentially, your license plate turns into your barcode now.
So, you know.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Brilliant. That really could help us figuring out how to do this barcode thing or not do the barcode thing. If we wouldn't have to do the barcode thing if we had this license plate reader.
And now we're not
paying. Then it's totally voluntary.
And we're not paying $4,000 a month for barcodes anymore, or $4,000 every time we have to re-up the.
Yeah, probably four but times a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more than that. Can't you charge more than $10?
Okay.
I mean, I don't know.
So, but that takes away the joy of being able to have 6 or 7 different colored tags.
Okay, I don't want to.
I mean, where else can you live where you can clearly identify people, who they are, and where they're going just by the color of the tag hanging off their rearview mirror.
What I feel bad for is those guys in the classic cars and the Ferraris that don't want to put the stickers on there because it depreciates it. And I don't blame them.
But they'll be the first in line to sign up to pay.
Move on to
further license.
We get this.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd like to...
I'll talk to Patrick and see if I need an ordinance or not, because he might say, well, it's a voluntary fee. You're not imposing a fee on everybody.
No, you people can elect to purchase it or not. Mm-hmm. It's not a tax.
Yeah. And then they'd have to come in here to pay for it, and then we get together with...
We need to talk about process.
That's brilliant.
So what I'd like to do is commit the three of us, Cecilia, Chris, to a conversation about this, outlining specifics, and all that sort of stuff. So can we do that before the next board meeting?
I would like to get that guy on and have him do that demo for you guys.
Yeah.
Because he'd be able to sell his product better than I
can. Right, right. And we talked about that.
I've seen the demo, and I hook, line, and sinker.
We talked about that, and we haven't been able to do that, but I agree with you. I think it should be to the board, the whole board.
Yeah.
I mean, we're looking for, we've already got the problem's big enough. It's like when you renovate your kitchen, the last thing you buy is your refrigerator. You don't care what it costs because you've already spent so much money. It doesn't matter.
He's got a point.
Yeah. So. Pretty much everything we talked about, it outlined my technology evaluation report for the ISC West. That's almost everything's in words already. I mean, so if you guys want to end up reading it.
And you guys have that, right? I mean,
does RMA say? Which one are they springing for? Couple of robots, or we're getting the whole little vehicle?
The fleet. It's more of the cameras is what we're looking at. They're looking more towards the camera side of it.
Okay.
And we were looking at one where it will tell you that there's a fire and you start right there before there's even smoke. And so that's what it's like.
Yeah.
The flares are just amazing. So next year's technology is going to be amazing for us. If we go back, they'll show it. But
They could demo that here because they could bring that in and put it right there, and it would say this place is on fire.
Can we maybe make a date right now? Because I have a calendar here. Next week we have it's Easter weekend. We have improvements and personnel on the 7th.
We have personnel on the 6th because Mr. Merchant wasn't able to make it on the 7th. Is that true, sir?
Mm-hmm. We changed it, yeah. I got the first part this morning, yeah.
I was going to say.
Well, no, I'm still blind. I'm just starting the process.
So, my goodness, how about, do people want to do anything on the Friday? Mm-hmm. Is that a Friday that?
Friday the 10th, we're off.
Okay. I don't know that we can get it done before the board meeting, but we can.
Okay,
so let's do it sometime the last 2 weeks of April.
Yeah.
How about the 21st? It's a Tuesday.
I'm gone that week.
Oh, okay.
No, that's...
29th I could do.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm April 29th? The 21st, too.
Are you here on the 29th?
April 29th.
Going once, going twice.
So, 10 o'clock?
10 a.m.
Yeah, that's fine.
And this is just the talks amongst us. You don't want to go access involved just yet?
Say that again?
We would bring go access in after we've...
After we talked about it amongst ourselves?
Put the whole thing together,
It's just a new go access.
So, Brandon, Chris... John, me, and Amelia, and Diane.
Will you send the invitation?
Okay. And then I'll write a basic agenda. Okay? And I'll send everybody an email.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Okay. Where are we on this? The camera workshop. Well, that kind of fits into this whole thing, and I'm going to be real brief. I haven't set up another meeting. The last meeting we had was on March 10th. Is that right? I don't quite remember. The bottom line with the camera workshop is that, yes, we can address the camera situation because theoretically, again, there should be a security impact fee money. Until we know what that is, I would, and I'm going to recommend that we basically do whatever work we can do in identifying the types of cameras we need and, you know, the legwork, the footwork, whatever you want to call it, so that when we come up with some money, we can move forward on that. In the meantime, and again, I want to make sure that everybody understands that these security impact fees are one-time fees, and maybe one of the reasons why we can't always identify if we got them or not is because we've only built a very limited, it's not been a constant development cycle here. We built 22 units in 2015, then we built 78 units, and then the next thing was the 62 units in the retreats. And so it's not like we've accrued a great deal of money from all of this. So that's my recommendation for the camera workshop, is that we identify some things that we can do to prepare ourselves, and then we're going to put it on hold. Rod recommended that we start the joint security committee meetings again, and I think that is probably a really good idea. I'm not going to be involved in that because I have enough to do, but we've got to get get a representative from each board to come and probably Chris and Brandon and to do the security impact or the security joint security meetings. And this is just my opinion, but the conversations that have taken place regarding RMA assuming the responsibility for security, taking over security, really can't go forward until people start meeting together. There's just been, he should do that, she should do this,
right.
They should do this, we should do that. Who's paying for what? It's not going to get fixed until, or it's not going to be possible until that conversation starts for real. So.
Okay.
So that's it. Security guard job description, and that actually goes together with item number 7, the meeting with OE3.
Right. Do you want me to talk about this?
Sure. And Brandon can chime in, too.
So here's where we are. In 2018, the board approved a job description for the Security Patrol Officer 1. That went to the union, and that was approved by the union. In 2021, Paula redid that job description to make it a Patrol Officer 1 and 2. That did not go to the union. In 2024, Mark and Mimi updated a job description. Well, they created a new job for a CSO, Community Services Officer. That job did not go to the union, but it was approved by the board. So the last job description that was approved by the board and the union was 2018 Security Patrol Officer.
Mm-hmm.
In that job description, they have equipment, and the equipment is a baton, handcuffs, and
pepper spray.
So now we come to the conundrum, which I have a question into legal counsel. If it is the will of the board, so now I have to find out what the will of the board is, because in my mind, the will of the board is they won't carry any weapons. Those are not included in the CSO job description. That's the last time the board voted on this. And so I have a question into our legal counsel. And the question is, which I haven't heard back yet, I asked him again yesterday, what would the possible ramifications with the union be if the board wished to not follow that approved job description, and those items are included as equipment that we will provide the officers in the MOU, in our contract with the union. So what are their ramifications? Can they file a grievance with us? Can they fine us? And if so, how much would that be? To find out, you know, what the cost could potentially be versus changing and them not carrying any weapons.
So, okay. I've tried to figure this out for a long time, and what I understand basically is what you said, but we need to move away from that CSO job description. That's the number one thing that has to happen, and so
right. But
and we're
the
not
real the real debate isn't whether we call them a CSO or we call them a patrol officer. The real debate is in the equipment that they will or will not carry. That's the debate.
Well, that may be the debate, but there's more to it than that, because the CSO job description doesn't fit with what this community needs.
No.
And we're not using the CSO job description at this point. Is that correct?
That's well, yeah, because it has nothing to do with our community or what we need or what that person should be doing.
But it also wasn't approved
by the union.
By the union. So we can't use that job description at this point.
The job description that was approved by the union was in 2018.
Right.
But so, if the last time the board voted on a job description, which is voting on equipment, because that equipment wasn't included in the CSO, so in my mind, the board has told me that they shouldn't carry the equipment, because that was the job description they voted on.
And actually what happened, from what Brandon has relayed to me also, is that when the board voted on the CSO job description, which didn't go to the union, Mark right. Matlich went down and told the security department, no weapons, no nothing.
Exactly.
And it wasn't printed up on anything. It wasn't an email. It wasn't anything.
It was verbal.
It was verbal. And so everybody, all the security folks turned in their stuff, if I understand that correctly.
It was owned by them.
Pardon me?
They own it.
Who owns it?
So the batons, the pepper spray, and the handcuffs.
Okay, so they just were told they can't bring it.
Yeah, they just don't put it onto their belt.
Okay.
They leave employment with us, they're not required to return their equipment?
Only if we bought it.
Huh?
Only if we bought it.
But we supplied that per the MOU. We purchased the pepper spray, the baton, the holders, the handcuffs. We purchased all that for them according to the MOU.
When I was here the first time, I brought all my own equipment.
Okay, well, yeah.
The only thing is that you guys would reimburse you guys would provide it if we don't buy it ourselves.
So will you please go back through the receipts and see who owns that equipment?
The batons, pepper spray, and handcuffs?
Yes, sir. And the holders for those items.
Well, we have a box of like holders for handguns and stuff that we still have.
Oh, so the
and duty
so that
belts
we
and
owe.
Stuff. Yeah,
we
that,
owe.
That we own.
Okay.
Usually, it's the cases and stuff that we own, if they don't already have it. But most of the guys like Vitaly, and Paul, and Drake now, and they've never asked me to buy them any of that. So I already could tell you everything that they wear and that they have is what they own.
Thank you.
And that, under this current CSO description, basically is their equipment is zero, in theory.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay. I don't know what to do first at this point.
I don't either.
Because we started this a long time ago, a year ago. Right, Brandon? Because
mm-hmm.
you had just sort of come on board at this point, and you came in April. And we were already dealing with gate craziness and a whole bunch of other things. And it was when I started reading about the CSO job position, et cetera, and I will own up to this. I know that the board voted on this. I honestly don't. I guess it was a trust thing or something, but I honestly don't recall exactly how that all transpired. I don't remember the meeting that we voted on it. I don't remember really understanding.
What was the date? Do you know?
I want to say October 2024.
But that we approved the CSO.
Sure, let me send you the transcript and the.
No, I don't want the transcript. I just want you to tell me what the date was. I'm going to believe you when you tell me what the date is.
One moment, sorry.
I think it was September.
Okay, right in that neck of the woods.
Well,
so
have we then? I'm just going to ask this because I don't know either.
I don't know.
Have we come full circle to where we went? To the CSO. CSO, as I remember it, was a polo shirt and a Prius.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically.
That was where that went.
Mm-hmm.
We're not there. Never went there.
No. Don't want to go there.
And that's my next question is the board saying we don't want to go there? So if that is the case, then we have something close with the existing 2018 job description.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Tell me if I'm wrong.
Yes, sir, you're not correct with that because the 2018 job description gives them the equipment, the mace, the...
Right.
I said close.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the 2018 job description, is there a weapon in there?
A gun holster.
Well, yeah. But then, I have never, not recently... Have
because
heard
the gun
of anybody
holster,
killing anybody with a holster.
The gun holster was removed from the MOU when it was signed.
Okay,
some,
well,
right.
And I don't care. I don't care if it's still in there. Really.
Right.
But the weapon itself.
To my knowledge, since I've been here, we've never given them the weapon. They brought their own weapon from home.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that was
part. No, but yeah, I don't care who brought it from where. When they go on patrol.
Right.
They're not, at this point, allowed.
No,
to carry a gun. That's true.
That's written down, or that's not in. It's omitted. That piece of equipment is omitted from the current 2018 job description.
That piece of equipment, which is the gun holster, which was the only thing that we ever provided them, is omitted from the 2023 MOU.
What is there a piece of paper? Now I'm going to keep going here. A piece of paper that says you may not take a weapon on patrol with you.
There is not. Nor is there a piece of paper that says you may take a weapon on patrol with you.
Wow. What the hell am I even doing?
So maybe,
I have spent way too much time thinking about this, John.
No, you haven't, because...
You're our resource.
The first thing in my mind...
Yes.
If we're going to get agreement here that we're sticking with 2018 as it exists because that's what the union says we have with them,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and there is nothing in that agreement that says one way or the other that a weapon may or may not be part of the equipment, then we need something from this board. And I don't know that it matters to the... it matters. I don't care whether they care, the union. If we say from the board here...
No equipment.
There's an ordinance or whatever, resolution or whatever it is, that you may not...
Carry equipment.
Carry a weapon.
A weapon.
Yeah.
Different than...
Okay.
Different.
Pistola, whatever you want to call it.
A gun.
You can't carry a gun.
So.
So that has to be taken off the table, or put on the table, whatever the board says.
There's
it wants
more.
To do.
There's more. A little bit more.
There's
to
more
it.
To it.
Though there is more, but that's the first. That's step one.
Well, it is and it isn't, because one of the things that I've read up on, and Brandon's helped me understand, there's a difference between a lethal weapon and a non-lethal weapon, and a little thing in the middle that kind of says, well, not really a lethal weapon. right?
Toss.
Am I right about
lethal?
Yeah. Right? Am I
right?
Speaking
from experience, what we're talking about is a lethal weapon.
Yes.
Yeah.
But so is a baton.
Yeah, but...
Sure.
It can
so
be in the way that it's used, yeah.
Yeah.
The baton can't be in the way that it's used.
Okay. I was just dealing with the existing. The baton's not in there either, is it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, they provide the baton.
Is it in there?
I have to correct myself. It was actually 2016, not 2018. Mm. So.
Thank God.
What about the only thing I have a question about is, so when you talk about stuff being on paper, the operations manual that we currently go off of as well, that's never been updated since then either. It talks about how many rounds that we're supposed to carry and having a what caliber firearm and the qualifications to carry that firearm. Do we not go off of operation manuals anymore? Like, how do you differentiate from that?
The operation manual that was updated, I think, in 2010.
Yeah.
2011.
Because that's the other place that I'm just bringing it up just to say.
Yeah,
cause
it would have to be changed there, too.
Yeah.
But the first thing that has to happen is the board has to tell us what exact equipment they want the patrol officers to carry. And once I have that direction, I will make that a reality.
Okay. And my take on that is there are two things. Pepper spray and handcuffs. And beyond that, we start getting into, you know, how many deaths happened and, you know, how much time. And I mean, I've done some reading. And those statistics are very low, but they're there. And people use those statistics to make an issue out of things. So that would be my personal recommendation on this committee, is that we address the situation with the understanding or presentation that we will provide handcuffs and pepper spray. And so I don't know how we do that.
So that's where it goes to the board, and the board votes and gives me direction, and then again I will make that a reality. And if it means, and by the time we come to the board meeting, I'll have a legal opinion on how much, what the ramifications could be from the union if we go outside of the MOU. Can they charge us $1 million a day? Maybe. I don't know.
Well, when
I don't think so.
When we do this,
it would be nominal.
When we do this, and we know we have to then go to the board and say we want to use this job equipment and this this job description and this job equipment, isn't that what would happen next? At that point?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So that's a negotiation, or
it's a vote that the board has to take. I have the last draft of your most recent job description that we all worked on. It talked about observe and report.
Mm-hmm.
If it's the will of the committee, I can take that back to the board. I can write a memo that says this is the job description that we're recommending. And then highlight in yellow the parts about equipment and really call that out and say, it's not so much the job description, while it's important, it's the equipment that the board wants them to use.
Right, because you have, and
just finally, because I've been debating about what equipment they're going to use since 2024. So finally have a final vote from the board that they understand. Not only are we voting this new job description in, we're also voting...
The equipment is a part of the job description.
Yeah, what we're really voting on is what equipment. Because I think there's been a lot of confusion throughout the board, too, about what equipment they'll carry.
Well, we've been talking about it. How many times?
You know, the part of it that there's two pieces, and I think the mechanical way to deal with the four pieces of equipment is in this conversation and in this vote is to deal with them individually.
Okay.
So, in other words, we're not grouping them together. We're not saying, well, handcuffs and this and guns and that.
Okay.
We're going to say we got four things that are on the table here. Which ones do you want them to go out on patrol with? Pick them.
Okay. So
go ahead.
Okay. Handcuffs.
Batons.
Pepper spray.
And tasers.
And
that's not on any list that we've had in the past.
But let's not have to go back and revote on that tomorrow. next month.
I know. I'm just saying that that would be something that would be new.
And do you want me to add guns to the list?
No.
If we've never formally
I mean, if it has to be approved by the board, might as well put them all on the list and then let the board vote on it.
I was going to say, if you've never ruled one way or another on a weapon,
let's just then
we might as well put it in there, right?
Maybe, but on a handgun, then put that on the list and let's treat them one at a time.
So handcuffs, baton, tasers, handguns, and pepper spray.
The other thing for Patrick to instruct us on is, and Linda's right, there is an element of risk in each one of these pieces of equipment. Okay? And that maybe it's an interface with GSRMA to tell us what they've never told us in the past is when we shoot somebody, how much are we covered?
Well,
let me finish, though, my thought.
No, that's okay.
Okay, so it would be good to understand that, you know, a can of mace is a risk in some respects, but it's a minimal risk, and a taser is maybe slightly elevated, but still a minimal risk. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether they are or not. We know on the other end of it what the gun does.
Right, okay? And the baton.
And the baton. Okay, so based on that, we have the pieces of equipment surround what is a philosophical question as to what the community wants and what they think security is. Because what comes out of this, depending on if you get zero votes for zero pieces of equipment, okay, you have a Prius and a polo shirt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, should I add the camera?
Because the camera is body cam. That's
camera,
different.
Cameras. Nobody's been shot by a
camera.
That's a required piece of equipment.
So
isn't it,
yeah,
basically.
And we're, you know, it can be. It's benign. Mm-hmm. You know, it
it's
helps.
It's benign.
So we use it. But beyond that, then it becomes a question of what it is you want security to support, and that goes right to where we are with the budget, is how much money do we have to support mm-hmm. it with. So we might as well have that discussion logically, step by step, to come to a conclusion. Are we going to go with what looks like a 2018 job description? It's not perfect, but it's what the union thinks we're doing anyway.
Right.
Or are we reinventing the wheel here and saying, this is what it is now. It's mm-hmm. you know, it's a patrol, and if it's observe and report, and this person in the car doesn't have any protection whatsoever, you can't expect that person to get out of that car mm-hmm. ever.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't.
No.
At 3 o'clock in the morning with, you know, some heavenly...
And go check out the nail salon.
Yeah, and that even falls under the enforcement of rules with inside the community as well. You know, because anything could go... Before it sit there to enforce rules, now we got to step out of our car and tell that guy, hey, you're in this park after hours. Yeah. So.
So that's kind of what the parameters are.
There's something else in there.
Go ahead.
I have a bulletproof vest.
Yeah, that.
Those have always been, if they want to use them.
Let me. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Add that on.
The report that Brandon put together on observing report.
Right.
We went through, many conversations, and Brandon did an excellent job on that. What we have in one board member is who basically... I don't really know how the process went, but wants no weapons and no equipment whatsoever, and spends a lot of time telling us about the risk factors. And the bottom line is that observe and report can be interpreted in more than one way. You can have observe and report, and if you have no protection for the guards, the security people, they should not get out of their car. They should not address any violent or even potential violent situations. They observe and report. if the security department and patrol people have something to protect themselves and to hopefully de-escalate a situation like mace and the handcuffs to hold them down, then we have an interpretation of, I'm not exactly sure how to say it, but we have more room to move. We have we have the opportunity and the safety issue for both residents and the security patrol to assess the situation and see if it's within the bounds of what we've identified as we want the observe and report to mean in this community.
The only time any time that equipment would ever be used is on the unfortunate time that they would have to use self-defense practices. And from there, they would choose the best viable option. You don't just automatically shoot somebody that's punching you. You would pepper spray them. Right. You would use your hands. Mm-hmm. There's so many different options. When you give somebody the ability to have options, it in itself makes the risk factor less than what it needs to be.
Oh, okay.
Because if I were to just go hands-on and now I'm a Golden Glove boxer, mm-hmm. and I didn't pepper spray the guy, would you rather me have punched that guy and killed him? Or would you rather me pepper sprayed him and he can't see and now I'm able to get him into handcuffs and put him on the ground?
And that is exactly what we've been bouncing back and forth with. And my take on this particular situation is that we've got to ramp up and do as much training as we possibly can, and that's going to be a part of what I wanted to set up a plan for that. But de-escalation training.
Mm-hmm.
How to not immediately respond by punching somebody. Mm-hmm. How to de-escalate a situation. How to feel comfortable doing that, because a lot of people don't feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
They have a gut reaction to it. So that's part of it that's going to help us with the high-risk issue. And the other part of it is with some protection, i.e. the mace and the ability to restrain somebody with the handcuffs, I think we have to have something.
The whole reason why you have handcuffs too, though, is if I'm macing somebody or if I'm going hands-on with them, they have to be put in handcuffs. You can't just hold them down until somebody gets there. At that point, they committed a crime, which was an assault against you or another person.
Right.
So they have to be placed in a handcuffs and taken away by the sheriff's department.
I think the handcuffs are definitely a necessity.
But if we're talking about the specifics of wanting to lower the risk factor, I'd go with our robot right there. That's just observing, reporting.
Yeah,
there you go. $8,000 a month.
It's
there
not
you
an
go.
Option, but,
take it out of the water department or something.
I think the other thing that we have to remember is that there's always in this community confusion about things. One person interprets it one way, another person interprets it another way. And security is the number one thing that people look for when they want to move into this community. Number one. The second one is outdoor activities. The third one is open space. And the fourth one is golf.
Yeah.
And so, and that was a survey that was done by RMA a few years ago.
Yeah.
So,
when you really think about it, I'm sorry, Linda.
Yeah.
Let me get this point out here real quick. So if security being the number one focus on the reason why people live out here, this is really what this community and security is what separates the streets of Sacramento, having thousands of homeless people. I'm mm-hmm. sorry. Well, you know. That's what separates it. Because we have a security, because we have these gates, that's what keeps it nice
and
safe for our families.
I think that it was very well said. I just think that the expectation level of the community has to be directed toward this is a nonviolent crime. This is a violent crime. And the differentiation between that, you know, is, for instance, assault.
Mm-hmm.
That's a violent crime. We don't even answer those calls. we can't, if they come to the gate, they're referred to the sheriff's department. Okay. That differentiation is really big. I think people have to understand that, and then literally understand, we have to present it, that yes, you can call a patrol officer for these specific situations and expect to get a response if we have a patrol officer.
Right. Here we go with me talking about working out of prison again. The way that they kept like risk factors down, so like when I first started there, your floor, which we call them your floor officers, they're the guys that walk down the tiers and check mm-hmm. on the inmates and everything like that. They weren't allowed to carry anything at all. Mm-hmm. Your supervisor was the one that had pepper spray and handcuffs. Mm-hmm. And they did that because that was what kept the risk factor down, was you would want your guy that's on the floor, if he's having right. an issue with somebody, you call the supervisor up, and it's up to that supervisor to make the call, am I going to use force or not on this guy to get him to comply with whatever I'm telling him to do. If we want to go with the risk factor here, if you want to keep it the same way, I would have it just to where the supervisor is only to carry these limited items and call the supervisor to go handle the situation. And
you're the supervisor.
Right?
I mean, I'm just saying that's I'm just comparing
it's
it to...
It's impractical in our situation.
I mean, it just takes a phone call, though, either, too. Like, hey, now I'm saying he would have to get my approval, you know, to even go to a situation that I think, you know, that he should go to or not. Hmm. If he put it in my hands to say if he should go or not, and then I would answer the question as to why my guy didn't go there or why he didn't. I'm just throwing ideas out there, that's all.
No, and the real issue comes down to, I mean,
time.
You know, well, in terms of budgeting and financing whatever this operation is or isn't, I mean, and the one experience we have for whatever reason was we put a bond issue on a ballot and the public rejected it. And I understand the nine different reasons that people give that happened. And it had nothing to do with security. It had everything to do with not trusting CSD as an organization to manage it. So, I mean, the real issue that comes out of this vote on each individual piece of equipment is we come out at zero. You have philosophically have a different type of operation than you have
a CSO.
Than you do presently or you would envision that you would have in the future. And that's complicated, and it's complicated by the fact that now when I got here we had a fully staffed security department that took care of about 1,400 people.
Right.
Okay. Now we have somewhat of a limited experience. We no longer have chiefs, we no longer have sergeants, we no longer have fully funded patrol,
mm-hmm.
and we no longer have one gate that became two gates that were managing 20% of the volume that they manage now. And none of that has changed either realistically or philosophically as the population has grown to what it is now and what it will grow to very shortly.
561 houses later.
I think what happens as a result of this conversation we had now is a temporary fix, because at some point there has to be some type of a community roundtable, and we have two communities. We do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One over here.
Yeah.
And we have one over here. They're not the same community.
No.
And how do we deal with all of that? And, you know, in that focus and the conversations that have started to occur about RMA taking over the inside the gate operation, you might want something totally different on the other side of the street, and you might be able to get it, paying for it privately, and get what you want and get those guys. If you pay more money, you will get somebody with a weapon.
Mm-hmm. They
will give you the level of support that you want, as long as you're willing to pay for it.
Well,
so,
I think
the needs on both sides of the highway are different.
Well, and we talked just a little bit ago about going to the commercial center and presenting their option of having a private security group that is paid for by them. mm-hmm. to them.
Becomes and part not, of common not a, area maintenance.
It's not a part of CSD anymore. And so if we could make that happen, then I think our questions about security inside the gate take on a slightly different
And that would be, Amelia, in that conversation that you're going to have there, I mean, commercial entities would be, you know, both shopping centers.
Yes.
And probably the airport.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, he's got his own security, so he'd be happy to just
not be
part. I think. I mean, I'm not inside his head.
Okay. Well. Whatever,
yeah, I was going to say
whatever
that.
Works for them.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, if the commercial center, but the two plazas, could integrate the gardens and the village with those.
Yeah.
With
or
their security.
Or they're governed by homeowners associations.
Yeah, so they
which
could.
Are individual entities, and
yeah.
it's quite possible that the two of them could talk to each other, and maybe there's two independent services over there.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, you, if it gets too big, then you're doing a LAFCO-ish kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
where you're trying to organize it into some kind of a district with all kinds of rules and reporting
mm-hmm.
and everything else.
Yeah.
What we're talking about here is two homeowners associations getting together
yeah.
and hiring. Somebody and then charging their members to pay for it.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
pretty much it.
Got it.
What do we want to report back to the board?
Oh, let's go first to do we want this on the agenda as an action item to approve the security job description and the equipment individually that goes with that job description.
So when you say approve the security job description.
2000 and
she just wrote a new one.
Then, yeah.
Who just wrote a new one?
Yeah, the job description that included the observer and report and the changes in that.
Oh, yeah, right.
The other one that Brandon wrote.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Was that job description basically the same as the 2016-18 one? No. It was different. You know, one of the things that I remember doing is that that you did is that you took that CSO job description and you redlined it because 90% of those things were not things. Thank you, Chris. Were not things that security guards were doing.
Yeah.
Should be doing. Yeah. I don't know. I'm beyond confused at this point.
I think step one might be. To make ourselves consistent with what the union has now,
mm-hmm.
and by being consistent with that, tell me again what pieces of equipment are in that document.
The cuffs, handcuffs,
mace, batons, pepper spray, handcuffs, and all the holsters for that equipment, plus the gun holster.
Okay. No, the gun holster I think is removed. I will tell you.
You guys took it out.
I think it's removed.
Okay, and I'm not concerned about having to fight over the holster.
Yeah.
Right, the empty holster.
So to be consistent with that, the handgun is off the table
mm-hmm.
already.
Yeah.
So we have three pieces of equipment we need to wrestle with. It's an all or nothing, one, two, or three pieces. That's the first thing we need to do is.
Okay.
Is
right.
To make ourselves consistent, and from there, we now have something we're consistent with the union, and we can start all over.
That's exactly what I think is.
What it is we're going to do going forward from there.
Okay, so then you don't want to vote individually on these items. You
mm-hmm.
want to stay consistent with the union and the current job description and the MOU, which are just three items, pepper spray, mace, baton, correct?
And you might know, at the end of that conversation, we might say, 2018, and we are going to tell the union that there is, I'm making this up, because it could be, we're going to tell the union they're going to get nothing, but we're going to tell the union that there's going to be no baton.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're going to
Or maybe we're going to tell the union all three, depending on what this
conversation
board says they're going to do.
But we should still vote on them individually. Those three items, baton, so that we don't get caught up in the existential crisis.
You have to vote on them individually.
Okay, so vote on three items individually. Baton, mace, pepper spray, and handcuffs. I understand. Yes? And
do they have it? They have that stuff now, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. But including the batons?
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Okay.
And in here... Patrol officer equipment, duty belt, handgun holster, it is still in there, double cuff case, double magazine case, pepper spray case, baton holder, belt keepers, flashlight holder, radio holder, handcuffs, pepper spray, baton.
So it's those three items plus the things that hold them.
Yeah.
Plus the handgun holder.
Plus the handgun holster.
And there is no document that says one way or the other that you will or will not carry a handgun?
Not to my knowledge.
Only in the operations manual.
Okay.
Only the operations manual, which goes into it in detail.
Yes.
But that's not a public document. I mean, it exists, but it's... I suppose we would probably have to release that for a Public Records Act.
But we can amend the operations manual without going to the union, can we not?
Yeah, and we can amend the operations manual without bringing it to the board. The board does it. Do you guys want to vote on the 300-page security operations manual? I didn't think so.
Not this
week.
So,
okay. All right.
Yeah,
all
yeah. Right.
So when we go to the board, we're going to put security... Conversation, security, whatever.
It's going to be an action item. I'll write a memo and I'll send it over to you for approval so that you can, you know, make sure that I'm on the right track.
And then we'll all have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So.
And if you can explain the situation, the OE3 blah, blah, blah situation,
That's
the way you did to us, mm-hmm. that would be a good start.
And then we'll have it in writing.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Okay.
All right. And I'm going to put a time limit on that, so you guys can only discuss it for 30 minutes, and I'm going to say sorry. You have to vote right now.
I would say 15.
I can't do 15 that.
15 minutes.
I can't do that.
Oh,
I can't
you're not
do
allowed
that.
To do that? Do you know that when I
don't think I can do that. I think the Brown Act... Well, I know the Brown Act says I have to take every public comment.
Here's,
yeah,
you know, but do I have
know,
to let you guys debate
know,
forever?
I don't know in those rules whether a board member can call for the question or not.
Call for the question
in
of?
In other words, we're going to vote. I call for the question.
Oh.
Get a second on it.
Yeah.
If we get three votes, then we vote.
In the old, they're old. They're not historic exactly. ancient, but... 2014, 2015, I've been reading some of those board agendas and looking up stuff from that. But it always gives a time.
Yes, we always, but when I got here, we always had timed. And then it kind of was like, well, why do we do that?
I mean, it was not like we're going to take you out of the room if you go over 15 minutes. On
there
this
are are there specific rules about timed items? Because you, like downtown, they have a timed item, and if they're doing something else, they stop and they do the timed item, and then they go back to it. Like
I do put like the rate increase hearing.
Yeah,
that's it's going to say this item will.
Start
no,
5 p.m. or
yeah,
whatever.
No later yeah. than, I mean, it will start no earlier than 6 p.m. That's how I do it, so that if you're talking about whatever, you can finish up that conversation, give everybody a chance
that's
to get in the room.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It will start no earlier than 6 p.m.
Okay.
So right, I guess that we would just sing and dance.
RMA gate procedures, we've already talked about that.
We talked about that in communications.
Yeah.
Would you like to talk about it more here?
No.
Very good.
So we have director comments?
Director's comments, and the only thing I wanted to comment on is the budget issues, and we probably will address some of those when we have our meeting. We're $206,000. $206,000 in the red.
Over budget.
Over budget, whatever, however you want to put it. And what I like to make sure everybody knows, we can't charge any more than have any more than a 2% increase.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so obviously a 2% increase, that 2% increase was included in that
in the budget.
Yeah. So that $206,000 is still $206,000.
So if you read Proposition J,
I have it almost committed to memory.
1997.
Yes, it went into effect in 98.
And it tells you very specifically what the tax structure is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It tells you specifically what the rate increase is. It's easy. It's 2% a year till infinity.
Exactly.
And it also gives you a very specific list as to what those items are that can be paid for with that money.
Right. What the services we will provide are.
Right. What it does not say in there, and this is what I want you to ask Patrick to be ready to explain. Okay. It does not say that we have any allowance for our overhead.
Mm-hmm. No administrative costs.
Yeah. No administrative costs. We have no funding whatsoever for anything other than physical operating expenses.
Right.
Yes.
So
why are we paying the electricity at the North Gate?
If I say that we take the burden off of the county. Because if security was not here, there is an increase in the activity that would be generated that would require a police response. What my property tax allocation is for us to fund things that we do that the county in an unincorporated area would be required to provide. So why can't we? Well, we can, because it's unrestricted money.
Right.
So why do we, I understand we got a recommendation from
civil grand jury.
From the grand jury. But tell me why we cannot. What is so sacrosanct about funding this portion of our operation with that money? I'm not saying we give $206,000 to it, but I'm not saying we give zero to it either.
Right. And that perspective is what we need to address, because there have been board members who have said zero.
Right. So,
I think he's going to say that's at the will of the board. That's at the discretion of the board, whatever the board wants.
Okay,
I will get that response in writing. I'll start an email with the three of us so that you know what that says.
And so that...
I will try to get
that. Yeah, that is what it is, and the board will make that decision. But I'd also like to be able to fully explain what zero means. What do we lose if we take the 206? What I see in Proposition J in the authorized activities that we can fund is that the only place it can come from, because we can't take it out of operating income because we don't, I mean, out of overhead because we don't have any. It's not in there. So the only place it can come from is salaries. That's the only place there's that. That money exists is in salary. And unless you want to have a security department and no cars, or a security department and no telephones,
mm-hmm.
or, you know,
right.
No uniforms, then there's no place for it to come from. So the board needs to make a decision as to what we're going to or not going to fund. And then we'll just be what it is.
Purpose of the special tax, operating the security gates located at the entrances, 24 hours, Patrick, by the way, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, including but not limited to staffing these gates. Providing a 24-hour-a-day mobile patrol of the district and its boundaries. Operating radio communications, providing assistance to other agencies, monitoring, controlling, and registering guests or invitees, conducting such other activities as the board at its discretion may desire, other incidental costs of providing services listed above.
Incidental costs are not overhead.
No. Incidental
14%
costs is
14%
donuts.
14% of the entire organizational overhead is allocated to security, and it's not funded by Proposition J.
Right.
Say, and there it is. So that's you know.
The thing that we do pay, security department pays, and every other department pays a percentage of the total cost of administration fees, and security was way over the top. We paid way more than we used.
And then in 2024,
yeah,
Mark and Mimi brought that down so that it's at 12% now.
Right. So,
and I understood they were going to go back to past audits and adjust that retroactively, because we hadn't done audits. I don't understand.
Well, what they did was they assigned a percentage of 12% to security. And then they moved the money
a lot
around.
To water.
They moved it to water.
A lot of it to water.
So anyway, the budget issues really do coincide with everything that we've been talking about this
right.
morning.
And that's just part of the whole budget
that's
process.
That's part of the whole budget process.
Exactly.
Exactly. So the final thing in director comments, Rod Hart has asked me, okay, and you, Amelia, to meet with him regarding taking over security.
So we're going to schedule a joint security security committee.
He wants essentially, before we do that, he wants us to come over and answer a few basic questions, which are no more than things that you can get out of public record.
Mm-hmm.
So I suggest we have that meeting.
Yes.
And then before we do anything formally, and when we do something formally, we'll do it in that, I think we should do it in that organizational structure of a
joint security.
Joint security.
Or
okay.
or an ad hoc deal, something that, you know, allows those discussions to be not scheduled. Okay, I don't want to be answering comments from the public.
No,
in the
I know.
Of those discussions. There'll be some kind of a vote.
Okay.
A bunch of votes. So, okay.
Okay, so we'll work independently on your schedule and mine, and then I'll
right.
get together and I'll get that schedule.
I told him we would.
Like next week is good.
Yeah.
For me.
It's that next week's okay. The week after
we'll
is the one I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, you're going to be here for the board meeting.
Yeah, I'm here for the board meeting. It's the week after the board meeting that I'm not.
I'm gone that week, too. I'm okay. going to be at Disneyland. I know you're surprised to hear that.
Okay.
Shocking.
So, if we are finished with director and staff comments.
I have a comment, and this is just, it is just that. I feel as if the need for us to provide the security logs, which isn't legally required, the public could ask as a PRA request. But I just feel like that is a that has become a priority, and that we get those logs over to the newspaper. And I personally would like to stop providing those logs.
I don't know what it is that. Do we have anything in writing that says that's something that we have to do, or we've always?
No, I can.
And I'm not legally obligated to do that.
I can pull up a communication that I had with the newspaper at a point in time when there was a lot of pressure being put to provide those, to get that security
yeah.
log information.
I mean, I you know, and
so we can make a decision about that. I mean,
I think I'll put that on if you would like to discuss that further next month on this agenda.
Yeah, I mean, we don't, you know, and is it your time that is eaten
It's
up?
Brandon's time.
Yeah, I spent almost 2-3 hours redacting them in the mornings just
yeah,
to send
oh,
them.
Okay, well,
right?
And, you know, we don't, if we don't have $206,000, we sure as hell don't have time to do that.
Yeah.
So that's also not putting them on our website. So we can put
Yeah.
We could put them on the website because they're in the report.
But then he still has to redact them. They have to be redacted because they can't have any personal information in them.
Well, we don't put any personal information. Oh, that's what you do. You take all the...
Yeah, he's got to take it all out.
That's why it's not in there.
Look them over again. Make sure that's not
right.
Yeah,
and then I look them over.
And then there's just added pressure from the fact that Gail is pestering us because she has a deadline that she has to have.
Right. So all of a sudden now we're working for her and not for the. She doesn't even live in our district.
Right. So okay. Anyway.
So yeah, that's next month's agenda. Thank you.
Was that?
That's all I have.
Okay. So that is, the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you so much.
12:50.
Sounds good.
Okay.